You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Right now, use promo code SPORTS20. That's promo code SPORTS20 to get a free $20 bet at PlayAlberta.ca. Ryan, I guess my first question is for the Kraken, because if I look at cap friendly, I think they got like 34 players signed, and you know, so not a ton. Are they planning on bringing in more? Are they gonna announce a host of AHL signings, or do they have a lot of AHL only signed players?
Well, the thing with the AHL situation that's challenging is, remember, they're doing a partnership with the Florida Panthers in terms of having a team in Charlotte. And so they're only going to have between around 8 to 12 spots that they can really use. So it's not like they're in a situation where they can sign a full complement of players as if they had their own AHL team, which they'll have starting next season. So the numbers are possibly going to look a little bit smaller because, again, they're only going to have so many roster spots through the AHL, in addition, of course, to the guys that they're going to have playing major junior that they may or may not want to sign. So it wouldn't be too much of a surprise to see a little bit of a smaller roster than what most are used to.
Is it unfair to suggest that the Kraken have, you know, maybe just a good second line, but they don't have a first line caliber talent, or is that unfair?
It's hard to say because you don't know what necessarily this is going to look like, just because, I mean, there are top six forwards that they definitely do have, but at the same time, it's just a matter of seeing how it all works, because Jordan Eberle and Jaden Schwartz are all people who've played first-line minutes before. Jonas Stanskoy is someone who has played first-line minutes in Colorado, but still he was more of a middle six. But like, that was always going to be the challenge with this team through the expansion draft, and in some cases free agency, is there weren't a ton of top six forwards that really made it to free agency this year. Of course, that could change next year. Whereas if you look at the expansion draft, and Ron Francis has talked about this quite a bit, which is top six forwards weren't going to be available in great supply. And so when they were available, you tried to take the guys that you could. And so when you look at the players that were available, like an Eberle, like a Yanni Gord, like a Donskoy, maybe someone like a Jared McCann is a possibility, or someone like a Kelly Yonkruk, you try to get those options, but it comes with the idea that perhaps maybe in a different environment with more playing time and opportunities, perhaps they can fill those top six roles.
Ryan Clark joins us, and that's always going to be the challenge for any expansion team. I know Vegas had the greatest Cinderella run of all time when it comes to expansion teams, but now they got some lucky breaks. But even then, Marchessault wasn't for sure top line player, and definitely not Wild Bill Carlson, who has suddenly scored 42 goals. So when you look at Yanni Gord and Schwartz and Eberle, like, is there anybody that you see, like, what's your expectations of a guy like Morgan Geekie? Is he the guy who might be the surprise offensive player in Seattle?
You know, it's interesting to kind of figure out who that might be, just because, I mean, like, you look at Morgan Geekie, and it's one of those things where you sit there and you go, maybe this could be something, because, I mean, again, you've got height at 6'2". You can play him down the middle. You can play him on the edge. You look at his numbers in Carolina. I believe it's 13 points in 38 games, so you know that there's some production. But you do kind of wonder about what does his role look like with more time. And that's not just him. That's other players on this roster. But he's a really interesting example of what that can be. Another one would be Colin Blackwell, because, again, you just think about what he was able to do last season with the Rangers, having 22 points in 47 games, which if you play that out over an 82-game schedule, if he's not at 20 goals, he's around that point. So it's more production than what people might realize. So that's just going to be the thing, is like, when you look at those sort of players, like, what are you going to get out of them? What do you get out of someone like a Kelly Yonkruk? Because when people were talking about what you do with the Predators, Kelly Yonkruk's production over the last 2 years had been higher than that of Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson. So maybe that increases a little bit, or it is what it is, but either way, you never know. But then you also worry about someone too, like a Mason Appleton as well. Again, another one of these players who you see him. I mean, he brings you size at 6'2", 193. I mean, he was 25 and 56 last year. Maybe he gets some more minutes this year, and he's someone who maybe his numbers increase, and that's just going to be the thing with them. It's like, there are questions that are going to be answered throughout the season, but like, there's enough options there to where you go, maybe it can be this player, that player, or maybe it's someone you don't see coming who ends up being sort of the player that has the season that really kind of changes everything.
talking Kraken hockey with Athletics Kraken reporter Ryan S. Clark. Ryan, we talked about the forward. Let's touch on the defense. A veteran, large group. What's the play here for these guys? Take up a lot of space in the middle of the ice and then try to keep to the outside?
I mean, you would think that's going to be the plan while also just occupying passing lanes. Because, I mean, look, when you just look at what the Kraken did with the expansion draft, I mean, and kind of what their approach was, it was to make this a team with two-way ability. And when you look at the defense, I mean, it suggests that, especially when you look at the fact that your top four right now is looking like Mark Giordano, Jamie Oleksiak, Adam Larson, and Vince Dunn. And keep in mind, when you're looking at your bottom, pairing, you're talking about Carson Soucy, who can do a couple of things. Hayden Fleury is another name. William Borgen is someone that they're really curious to see what does he sort of look like over a full season when he's not injured. Dennis Cholowski is someone that they've seen kind of experience of with just what he's done with the Red Wings. And Jeremy Lazan is someone that you could use on the PK. And again, that's not taking into consideration what you could possibly have in potential bottom options with guys like a Connor Carrick or a Cale Fleury if it comes to that point. So the thing is, they're going to have depth, but in terms of like what the strategy and the scheme looks like, it seems like it's, yes, it's going to be that, but also it's going to be curious to see how it works with someone like a Philip Grubauer or Chris Driedger, because like when you look at the system Grubauer played in Colorado, it was one that was really good about not only limiting shots, because it was the defense that didn't allow the fewest shots in the NHL, it was in the top three, but also like those shots came from distance. So how is that going to work if you're the Kraken as well?
Ryan, when I look at the Kraken, though, they currently have 9 defensemen who all require waivers. Giordano, Oleksiak, Larson, Dunn, Soucy, Hayden Fleury, Will Borgen, Cholowski, and Jeremy Lazan. And the only right-shot D-men are Borgen and Adam Larson. And so I don't know if Borgen's automatically in because he's a right shot, but they'd have to move some left guys over. Do you sense a trade is coming? Because, a guy like Jeremy Lazan or Cholowski or... like, I think those guys would get claimed if you try to slide them through waivers.
Well, and that's just it. It's like, if you are the Kraken and you have this defensive surplus, and Francis has talked about, as training camp gets closer or you go through training camp, there might be the possibility of deals. Of course, he hasn't said, not that he ever really would or any general manager would, what their exact plans are. But when you're looking at what you said at the beginning of the show, which is how do you look at your forward options, specifically in the top six, it's not to say that those players will command that, but it is to say that those are players that can fill a need elsewhere that may be able to allow the Kraken to fill some needs elsewhere or at least be parts of deals that can help them facilitate that, in addition to the fact that this is a team that does have $7.493 million available in cap space. It's maybe not as much as it was, a month and a half ago, but at the same time, it is still the kind of money that there are teams that would love to have that. And so it's looking like those are going to be players that you would use to move along, because otherwise, why would you risk losing them for nothing on waivers?
Their high pick was Bernier's, Matthew Bernier's out of the University of Michigan. Is he going to be lock stocked up for not this year, but next year? After that year, he just comes up and he's now, one of these young centermen they desperately need?
And honestly, this just seems like it could depend on what happens this year at Michigan with him, because so often this discussion's been held about defensemen, whether it be Cale Makar, Adam Fox, Quinn Hughes, these players who they go back to college for a second year, they make these strides, they come to the NHL, and they have this seamless transition. And so with Matthew Beniers, it seems like a lot of it's going to be predicated on what he does in that second year. Like, are there things about him that after his freshman year probably would have made a team comfortable? Sure, but at the same time, like, if you're the Kraken, and more specifically, if you're Ron Francis and his staff, like, that's something, like, development was something that they took seriously in Carolina, and you saw the results of what it was like for them to give players time, especially those collegiate players, and the results they were able to get. And so if you're them, you're looking at this year thinking, what can be done? Because when you look at, again, how teams have managed college players, it seems like unless you've had some sort of amazing year, like what we saw Jack Eichel have at BU, it seems like the thought process is give these guys 2 years, and then by the end of that sophomore year, you bring them into the system, see how it works, and go from there, which is, again, what we've seen in so many places.
Ryan Clark joins us now with the Sports Leader TSN 1260 discussing the Kraken. In goal, it's pretty much secured. Grubauer is the starter. Chris Driedger is going to be the backup. So, you know, they'll send DeCord to the – he doesn't require waivers, so he can go to the minors. I'm guessing that's going to be one of the players that goes there. What about a guy like Cole Lynn? Does he have any chance to make this team, or do you think they're just going to give him some time in the American League, gain some confidence?
You know, it's possible that it could be one of those situations where they start him in the AHL and then try to see what happens. Because, like, the thing with Cole Lynn, when you look at his time with the Canucks, is he was always someone people talked about as, hey, he could be a scorer. And, I mean, a lot of that really does go back to what he did in the WHL. I mean, you think about, like, again, his second year with the Kelowna Rockets, his third year with the Rockets, where he had, like, 95 points and 39 goals. And when you look at some of what he did in Utica, especially in 2019-20 with 44 points in 61 games, like, that's the thing that makes people go, like, okay, what do you have there with someone like Cole Lynn? So, yes, they're going to want to experiment to see what they have. And, again, who's to say if he's someone that, again, might be someone that can be a potential contributor for this team? And, like, that's just it. It's like, and apologies for talking and such hypotheticals, but, like, that's the thing about a team that hasn't played a game where none of them have been on the ice together, or even the prospects, is just you just don't know how any of this is going to look. But when you look at someone like Cole Lynn, I mean, that's kind of been the conversation in Vancouver, but at the same time, how many times have we heard stories about a player who, yes, he was in one spot, there are questions about why it didn't materialize, he goes somewhere else, and all of a sudden it just seems like things are a little bit smoother and he has a greater fit and maybe a stronger, more secure role with a different organization.
Ryan, what are the expectations for the Kraken from the fan base after what happened with Vegas Golden Knights?
You know, it's interesting because it seems like there are some fans that before the expansion draft felt like maybe this could be like Vegas, and then after the expansion draft, when you saw that there are differences in the two, the big one, of course, being no side deals or anything like that, maybe people's expectations have not tempered, but it's still just a little bit more of a mystery in the sense of some people think this can be a playoff team. Maybe some people think they're not. And in terms of what the other crowd thinks, who knows? Of course, there might be people who think, okay, maybe they could go on this sort of, you know, unexpected run, kind of like what we saw the Golden Knights did. But at the same time, like, there's not really going to be any surprises with an expansion team just because we saw what happened not that long ago in the sense of how far an expansion team can really go. But in the sense of the expectations, there's two answers to that. Like, I think if you're a fan, one is maybe this is a team that makes the playoffs. If you're cynical, the expectation is, does it matter because they're going to sell out the arena every night and the Kraken are going to make money whether they win or lose.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I was going to ask you about that, right? Like, there's the obvious comparison to Vegas. I just don't think if Vegas is your baseline, I think you're setting yourself up for failure because they were such an outlier of so many things had to go well. Like, you think about it, had to go well, but like one of the worst strategies that has ever happened in Vegas turned out to galvanize that team. And I've had Darren England on the show talking about it. And, you know, he was a Vegas resident at the time, so he really related to it. And it's just, it made the players, you know, they had to get out in the community even more than they normally would. And it just felt like they were playing for something bigger than themselves. And that, it's hard. He couldn't even describe that feeling, but just there's a lot of things that went perfect for them. Right. So I think for Seattle, is it fair to say their goal is to hopefully be in the playoff hunt come, you know, out of the Olympic break?
Well, I mean, if you're them, that seems like that could be a realistic expectation, is just to try to be, again, in the playoff chase. Because, I mean, look, when you look at the Western Conference as a whole, I mean, you two know better than anyone. It's not exactly like there's going to be easy games on easy nights. And so there's going to definitely be challenges. But that being said, like, it's a team that, again, when you look at it, you say, okay, there's enough players here to where you have a feel for what they can do. It's just a matter of what they can do together. But also, like, where is this scoring going to come from? Because, again, when you look at this team and how they're built, defense is at the core of what they do. So it's not to say that it's going to work every night, but hypothetically speaking, this should be a team that has two-way ability, that has consistent defense, consistent goaltending, and that they should be in games. But as for, like, how the goals are going to come, again, that's the big question. And if they can get that figured out while having a consistent game defensively, then it appears like, yeah, maybe this could be a team that's at least in the playoff discussion, which, again, we've seen that before. So it seems like maybe that's kind of the realistic expectation, that maybe they could be in the playoff discussion coming out of the Olympic break.
Dave Haxtell is their coach. What does he bring? Does that lend itself to his type of style of coach, which is let's look after our own zone, let's be responsible with the puck, and you know, quite frankly, in many ways, it sounds like you're talking about letting the other team beat themselves.
Well, yes, because I mean, you just kind of look at some of the metrics of when Haxtell coached in Philadelphia, and as time went along, it was a team that really started getting better in certain areas of defensive play, especially the penalty kill, and then also when you look at the assistants that he's brought in as well and what their specialties have been, it seems like, yes, there's definitely this understanding of sort of two-way ability, but the reality of it is this. Like, the Kraken are set up, to be a team where, like, the defense is going to be a priority, and so is two-way ability. I mean, you think about someone like Yanni Gourde, Alex Winberg, Donskoy, Tanev, Yarncrook's another example, Marcus Johansson. I mean, again, like, the list goes on, in addition to the defensemen. And so, like, if you're them, that's what your identity is going to be, is just sort of how do you let that two-way play turn into goals, and that's going to be the thing, is how does this team look on the transition as well, just because, again, you know that they're going to be in their own zone defending, I mean, as is every team, but it's like, how do you take that opportunity and you transition it into something where maybe you're looking at rushes or you're trying to create some sort of offensive momentum going the other way, but again, when you look at what they're trying to be under Haxtell, and again, sorry to keep speaking in hypotheticals, but because, again, we just simply don't know yet. It seems like that is going to be the plan, that this is going to be a team that's really going to make defense the fulcrum of their operation.
Ryan, always good to catch up with you, man. It'll be interesting to see. Now, are the Kraken having a rookie camp, or with so few players, is it going to start next Wednesday like most teams, or what are they doing?
No, there is no rookie camp.
Okay.
So really the big thing that's going on with them right now is tomorrow they're having the grand opening of the Kraken Community Ice Center. And then they're going to have training camp start just like when everyone else does. But right now, I mean, when you look at their prospect base, unless they were to go out all of a sudden and start signing a bunch of, junior players that are free agents or whatever, they wouldn't even have enough to field a team.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just was double-checking. I appreciate your time. Always good to catch up with you, my man.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.